Blog Talk Radio.
Angela Butler. I am Angela Butler. Today, the interview is with Mr. Donald Evans. He's an activist, civil rights activist. He'll talk a little bit about Mr. Marcus Garvey. And later on in the show, Mr. Amos Mosley Pace will be joining Show Talk with Angela Butler. How are you doing this morning, Mr. Evans?
I'm doing just fine, my sister, and it's a pleasure to be on with you again. It's a blessing in my situation because I'm trying to say it's necessary to bring us together to get rid of the scattered condition that Dr. Claude Anderson warns us about. So I'm just happy to be on with you this morning, and I feel that it's a blessing to be on with you this morning. So I'm ready to proceed. And you give me the key to get going.
All right, Mr. Donald Evans. I guess one of my first questions would be is about unity, black unity. And what we talked about earlier about black unity and how unity would help slow down the killings of black people. A police officer and maybe even slow down some lynching. Could you talk about that in more detail?
Yes, I'd be delighted to do that. What I was telling you is that because we are scattered, ever since integration, we gave up our unity that we were experiencing at that time because we thought integration was going to give us a much better lifestyles. But what it did, it opened us up and scattered us all over the place. And people are doing things to us because we are not a united force. If you look at your hand, you got five fingers on your hand, and you know yourself. If you close your hand, you got a fist. That fist is a tight unit. That fist is an organized unit. That's what unity does for black people. It stops the scatteredness that is going on among our people. That's what happens whenever you have police that kill us and they let them off with no penalty at all for doing so, because there isn't anything we can do about it. We don't have any power. We can't make it dangerous for us. The injustice system to keep doing us that way. So when we come together as a people, we're 40 million strong. I mean, that's more than many of the countries on our continent. And if you come together with that power, it will give you a very, very strong force for you to defend yourself. And I'm not talking about defending yourself with guns and all of this kind of thing. I'm talking about with economic pressure. Whenever we take our resources away that we're giving away and bring it back united use it in order for us to use leverage. Leverage comes from power. If you don't have any power, you don't have any power to leverage. So anybody that is oppressing you can continue to do so. You can't do anything about it. So when I talk about unification, I'm talking about us coming together, teaching our children, ourselves, like the Catholics do, like the Mormons do, like the Jewish people do. They teach their own children how to be Jews. The Catholics teach their children how to be Catholics. And so does the Mormon. We're not teaching our children how to be good, powerful black citizens. And I'm black now because we are not African Americans. I mean, that is a decided fact. We are black Americans. We were born here in the United States of America. Many of us have never been out. So we don't know really anything about it if we don't study to know something about it, or if no one is teaching you about it. And in the school system that we have now, the European school system that we're educated under, no one is teaching you about Africa. If they teach you about Africa, they teach mostly in a negative way, because all of the countries that participated in our Holocaust stripped our country of all of its resources to build up Europe. That's why Europe is so powerful. So when we talk about unification, what we're talking about is building a power base, and what I'm talking about is building a black power base. And we all need to understand that we're not talking about threatening anyone, but we're talking about loving ourselves enough to protect ourselves. So that's the reason why I tell you is that we mustn't ever think that we are weak people. Our weakness is caused by our scatteredness. Right now, the reason why the Catholic Church is so strong is that it's just one church. It's the Catholic Church. But whenever you look at the black community, you see a multitude of churches. But that weakens us. That doesn't strengthen us. If we had only one black church that we all were under, that would be another one of the most powerful religious forces on this planet. But that day may come, maybe 100 years after I'm gone, that day may be here, where our people evolved into a one religious movement. So these things are relevant, and we must get to our children and bring our children back under our tutelage like they were before integration occurred. And some people say, well, that's a separatist idea. No. It isn't a separatist idea. It's an idea of you loving yourself. Are the Catholic separatists? Are the Mormon separatists? Are the Jewish separatists? Well, then you shouldn't call us separatists. Whenever we do the same thing for us, the black Americans. But once you do that, and once you come together, because it's decision time now. We have to make up our minds whether or not we are going to be black, whether we're not going to come together. We want everybody that has a black organization, a membership, of a black membership organization, we want them to come into the movement and register into this family movement in order for us to start building the power base that we need.
Yeah,
so that should give
that was. Are you talking about like the Urban League, Mr. Mark Morrell, the NAACP, Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Black Panthers? You talking about all of those organizations and others?
I'm talking about every black organization that has a membership, period. Coming together into this movement. A young man or a young lady that will take over the rule of this take over the membership of this organization, take over this a family movement, to give me and free me up so that I can move around the country and lecture the same way Dr. Claude Anderson does when he's talking about the ethno-aggregation program and power nomics and the Black History Reader, his last textbook. Those are the two books that we're going to use as a curriculum to teach our families once I can get the Nzingo Warrior and the Mandingo Warrior movement going. That's grandparents. It's just a name out of our history that we're using to give them focus, to grandparents forming teams that would be able to administer to the families, all of our families in the movement will have access to a grandparent team to come to their house and help them to set up study every day around the dinner table. We should be discussing economics of the family and who we are as a people. We really don't know who we are. And Minister Farrakhan is correct. We've been stripped of that knowledge, and we have been prevented from knowing it. But now, this is decision day. We are inviting all of those names that you just called, and I could go down to the Buffalo Soldiers, Black veterans, and all of us. But yes, the Panthers, all of them. We're asking them to come together with us, the families, all of our incarcerated people. We're asking the families of those incarcerated people to come into the movement so that we can better prepare for them when they come back home, when they release from incarceration. Many of them shouldn't even be there. And right now,
no, sir, they
the administration is talking about releasing large numbers of them. And there was no jobs out here for them when they went in. That's why many of them are in there. But we ourselves have to create the jobs and welcome them back home and make sure that we keep them out so that they don't go back in there. And we need to stop all of the drugs that is in our communities. And I'm with the president when he's talking about stopping the drugs from coming in the country, because they wind up in our communities and it hurt us and the guns. We don't manufacture no guns, neither do we manufacture ammunition. Yet and still, it's enough of it in our communities that we use it whenever we lose our cool and start shooting one another. And most of the time, the weapons are so defective that you may not hit your target, but you may kill an innocent child or an innocent person that God gave them the right to live out their lives, that no one should be taking their lives away from them. And in particular, those that look like us.
Yes, sir. I understand what you're saying about unity and the killing all over the United States, where they're killing people, killing Black people, right? They're all going in for the slaughter. America has a lot of blood running through its streets because of the killing. I just saw on TV a Black American gentleman. I didn't get his name, who died in police custody. He had a wine bottle, so they gave him a DUI test, and he had an accident, and they didn't get him medical help. Come to find out, he had 8 broken ribs and other things wrong with him. And soon lapsed into a coma and died. So, and the police officer is the one who signed the medical paperwork where he said he refused medical help. The police officer's signature. But the gentleman is dead now. Yes, he was a Black man. I have a relative that's in a coma. She's on Black support. And God willing, she will pull through it. Mr. Evans, I just have to ask you this. Say unity. And we're all scattered. How do you get 40 million plus people to all agree. I mean, black people don't trust each other.
Look, sister, you're 100% in what you're saying. But know this. If Jesus Christ came back here right now, do you think he would have an easy time getting 40 million black people to come into one organization? I don't think so. But why worry about that? Why worry about the 40 million? Why don't we concentrate on getting as many of us as we possibly can get into the movement and go on and do we have to do in order to protect ourselves? We don't need all 40 million.
With you.
So it's not necessary. It's not necessary to waste time on worrying about that and thinking about it or thinking that we don't trust one another. We haven't had the opportunity. You must present the opportunity for us to trust one another before you can legitimately say that we don't trust one another. We are not trusting one another. Now it appears because we're in a scattered condition and the oppressor is doing everything that he possibly can to keep us in that scattered condition because the behavior of it is lack of trust. But we have preachers that are in the pulpit every Sunday. It's been that way ever since we came out of physical slavery. But the thing is that we're not getting the results that we need from it. So that means that we got to do something else.
Okay. I agree with you, sir, Mr. Donald Evans. Also, I've noticed something over the years. I've watched the Mexicans, Latinos, and people like that, and I noticed that they speak in their native tongue, most of them, and also speak English. I've met people thanks to the internet from Africa. A lot of them speak English, African. Also, they have to be taught in school to learn to speak English. But over here in America, hardly any of the black people here speak in their native tongue, including me. So I just look at that. We were completely brainwashed and not even allowed the enslaver to speak in the native tongue. And I believe we're the only race like that.
Well, you say native tongue.
Blacks in America. Well, my ancestors' tongue, Africa, came over here. They were not allowed to speak in their language. They could only speak in the English language. They wouldn't teach them to read or write back then.
Let me stop you and get you back on focus. Of the things that you say that we are not doing, we will be able to do. That's what I'm talking about when I said we need to come together so that we can do the things that we know we're capable of. We have the brain to do it. Right now, you don't know what country you came from. Let's say, for example, once we come together, you have a DNA, you do that ancestry.com thing and find out what country did you come from. Once you find out what country you came from, then you can work to get dual citizenship in that country. And then you can start to learn one of the dialects. There are many dialects in these countries. It's possible for you to learn, and we should all learn Kiswahili, because Kiswahili is a kind of a universal language there on the African continent. I mean, we will do things. So we don't need to talk about what we can't do. Let's concentrate on
what we can do. And I like what you're doing. You're going to be raffling off tickets to name a town between Batesville, Mississippi, and Marks, Mississippi. Would you like to talk about that, Mr. Donald Evans?
Let me say, we've been talking about now that we need to build our own communities. We need to do this and we need to do that. Where are we starting? you never get to the end of the journey if you don't take the first step. There's a Smith family that lives in the area that I'm talking about, between Batesville and Marks, Mississippi. They own the land already. That's where the town is going to be built. The town is not named. We are going to raise monies to start with, even though the family, the head pioneer in the family, is named James X. Smith. And he's the one who is fixing the paperwork. What I mean fixing the paperwork is he's putting together the paperwork that will ask for millions of dollars in a grant in order for this town to be built. But that is not going to be enough money to build all of the homes that we plan to build with this town. I don't know how it is there where you are, but most of the people here that's in poverty live in these trailers. And a lot of the trailers are not even fit for animals to live in. So when the weather gets bad like it is now, then the people have a hard time keeping the place warm and all of that, because it costs additional money in the wintertime to heat the facilities, what have you. These are just some of the conditions I'm talking about we are going to be able to eliminate with the towns that we will be building. And I'm talking about towns, I'm talking about towns, I'm talking about homes all throughout the South.
There are places like that here, and those places, the landlords are usually white, and they charge about $400 to $450 a month to stay in them, and they're not all good.
Well,
just a few places.
We're going to affect change in those areas once we get started, once how it's done, once we prove to the people that we are really sincere about what we said when we say we're going to bring change to ourselves. Nobody else is going to do that. God has blessed us many times over. I'm talking about the God that we serve. Our Jesus is not blonde-headed and he's not blue-eyed. Our Jesus Christ, I tell people, I jokingly tell the children, I say, my Jesus looks like me because I the one that helped Jay-Z to Queen B because he looked like me. And one little girl said, Papa Doug, why don't you cut a rap record? I said, babe, I'm not interested in being known as I have the ability to rap because rapping is nothing but rhyming words and putting your point of view in what you are saying.
Yes, sir. Mr. Donald Heaven, I know I'm making history interviewing you. I do know that.
Well,
I'm living history, current history, past history.
We're going to do everything that we possibly can. I gave you my word that we're going to extend this program out because once you do that, once you extend it out to a longer period of time, there's a very powerful lady. Her name is Etha Kane Russell, and she's the founder of a program called the POP program, and that's creating jobs.
I interviewed Ms. Russell. I interviewed her last year.
Oh, you did? She didn't.
Black Wall Street. Yes, I did.
She didn't tell me that. She lives here in my house whenever she's in Mount Bayou. She just walked out with three of her grandchildren just a few minutes ago.
Great woman. Great woman.
Yes, she is.
Yes.
I mean, she's very top. And I love for little girls to hear her voice because that's very important. That all of these strong people that you get on that radio program, that's the reason why I want you to get it out and I want you to build it up. And I will see that I can do everything to bring in some resources to you where you can do that. And I know that will make
sir.
You happy.
Very happy. Very happy. It's rough. I have an internet bill and a radio bill. So I've been putting it in a long time, getting ready to second with the last year, and I would appreciate any help you could give. I would appreciate it. I'd be grateful.
Well,
matter of fact, I just got through thanking God for you. Seven.
I want you to know that right now I'm raffling off a car. It's a brand new Honda. And I'm raffling it off for $10 a chance. All of the raffle is out there now. And that's to raise money. But we have a perpetual fund. A perpetual fund is a fund that is ongoing. It will be there as long as black people need it. We need to build this up to $1 billion in order to pay our way out of poverty. And what I mean by paying our way out of poverty, whenever you build anything, right now we build a house. We got
I'm sorry. Hold on. Let me meet you out, Mr. Amos Mosley. I had no reason, but I'm sorry. Mr. Donald Evans, Mr. Amos Mosley Pates just joined us, and I hear the noise in the background. How are you doing? I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Evans.
How are you doing?
Mr. Amos Mosley Pates?
He's not here yet.
Oh, I guess just the one that called me in the distance. Okay. All right. So, please go on, Mr. Evans.
Yes, I was telling you that we are raffling off a car all over the country. And to take a chance on winning the car, the tickets are going for $10. And You can go to www.nafra, that's NAAFRA.net/raffle. I repeat, that's www.NAAFRA.net/raffle, RAFFLE. You can pull that up, and once you pull it up, you will be able to see what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Did you get that?
Yes, sir.
Did you get that?
I did. Yes, sir, I did.
Okay, well, in just a minute. Just a minute, Brother Amos.
Okay.
I said in just a minute. Just a minute, Brother Amos will be home.
It's a string of callers. So I thought one of them was his. I apologize for unmuting the people that called in. I didn't have the area code that he was calling in from. You got about 15 people that called in to listen to you, Mr. Donald Evans. Would you like to talk about Mr. Marcus Garvey?
Yes, and while I'm talking about Brother Garvey, Brother Amos will probably interrupt us in a minute or so as soon as he called in, but he's in my house dialing you now.
Yes, sir.
Let me explain something to those of you who are not familiar with Marcus Garvey. You're going to become very familiar with him because Marcus Garvey is the greatest black organizer that the world has ever seen. Brother Garvey organized a movement, the UNIA movement. And he had millions of black people in that movement. And his purpose of organizing it was to take them back to the continent, back to Africa. And before he could be successful in that movement, he had found the land and he found the country that would be big enough at that time to take a movement of our people to establish a country back there on the continent. But he was undercut because the people in that country, like it is here, many Negroes sell out other Negroes that's trying to do something. And we are preparing ourselves against that kind of thing here with this black movement, is that we're going to make sure that we will be in a position to deal with anyone that tried to betray us by coming among us and trying to undermine and undercut what it is that we are doing. So the thing that we want to do is we want to make sure that we continue. That we continue to let go.
Yes, I understand what you're saying. Okay. Mr. Marcus Garvey. I didn't know a whole lot of about Mr. Marcus Garvey myself. I've been researching him more and more. I knew about Mr. Louis Farrakhan, Mr. Dr. Paul Anderson is a great man. You are a great man, Mr. Donald Evans. I didn't know a whole lot about Mr. Marcus Garvey. I knew about Dr. Martin Luther King.
I'm going to let Brother Amos introduce himself before we run out of time. Yes. And you wanted to ask him, how did this town come about?
Yes, sir.
I'm listening, sis. How you doing?
Hi, how are you, sir? How did this town come about? Thank you, Mr. Amos Mosley Tate. You were a former alderman. And you were in office for a very long time.
Pardon me? Didn't get your last question. What you say?
I'm sorry. I said hello, Mr. Amos Mosley Tate. You were an activist. You were also a former alderman. You voted in office and held the position for a long time. So welcome to Show Talk with Angela Butler, sir.
Well, right now I'm still active in the community, but I'm not off into the political arena per se, but you asked the question about how did Mount Body get started and why did it get started. I think I heard you say that.
Yes, sir.
I don't know how well versed you in history, but if you study any of the Mississippi history, they're not going to have too much about the reason and how Mount Body got started. But Mount Body got started from an idea from an Englishman over there in England. Jefferson Davis' brother, who was named Joseph Davis, he was the heir of the plantation that they ran down here in Warren County, Mississippi, by Vicksburg. It was some 5,000 acres of land that Jefferson Davis and his brother was working. So Jefferson Davis was a military man who was fighting. Matter of fact, he was the president of the South at that time. And Joseph Davis was a landowner and a planter. So what they did, they had the I.T. Montgomery's family, who dad was named Benjamin Montgomery, who happened to have been Joe Davis' slave coming out of Virginia. And I.T. Montgomery's dad was a visionary. He was an inventor. He was everything that you can think of that a man could be, trying to get out of the bondage of slavery as well as do God's will. That was Benjamin Montgomery. But Benjamin Montgomery ran away 6 times from his plantation owners. And it was a deal that struck. And Benjamin Thornton Montgomery made a deal with Joe Davis, who was a landowner over his plantation. He said that he would continue to run away if he didn't treat his people with a bargain that they made. The bargain was that the slaves on that plantation will have to learn how to read, write, and have ownership of what they created on that plantation. And that did come about, and that happened. And while reading, if you can go to Amazon.com, you'll probably find this book that talks about Pursuit of a Dream by Janice Harmon, and it tells you the story about Mount Baia, how it got started. But this is this I think McGovern has a great grandson that I'm in contact with, and he's doing a book about his family as well. But economic development and ownership and entrepreneurship started for black people, I would say, here on this plantation, because these people had all kinds of skills. And one of the men that, who drove George Washington, who happened to be our first president in this country, he drove George Washington around, and this man's name was called Mr. Ben. He was on that plantation down there. He just happened to live to be 114 years old. And the only thing he did was drove the landowners around. And the unique part about that plantation, they always had the court system. If a slave did something on that plantation, the white people didn't do anything to him. His own trial, and they judged that particular individual for the wrongdoing that they did. So they had their own system of government, their own system of economic development. Everything that we are trying to get today, they had that on that plantation. So when the Civil War came to the close, the federal government came in and took the land. And so some way or another, the Montgomery family ended up with 5,000 acres of land for about 15 to 20 years. They harvested and took care of themselves and other blacks in that area and whites too. And the government carried it to the Supreme Court. Jefferson Davis carried it to the Supreme Court and he got the land back. But it's just a story that could be told over and over again, and you still don't have all the details and information about it. We got a lot of work still to be done just here in Mount Baia, all across the state of Mississippi. In the country when it comes down to black folk America. And I just happen to be a retired adult education teacher coming out of the prison system. I taught the GED program for 30-some years and as well as taught 12 years in the public school system. So it's always a struggle which is going to continue. We're going to have to tell the story and show the story with our people because a lot of us are not aware of what's going on. Some of us who are aware either don't care or we got that selfish mentality. And I'm gonna I never get your name.
I'm Angela.
Yes, sir. Okay. So what I possibly do, I probably send you some information on the history of Mount Baia and some other things that we're doing here.
I'm Angela Butler. Okay.
I'd love
to receive information from you.
Yeah, this is Dr. Evans. I'm back now. And we got about five more minutes, sir. But I wanted to respond to that question you asked me, how I felt about that senator that had just been elected here in the state of Mississippi, about your comment that she made. And I told you I didn't think anything about it, neither was I surprised, because there were senators, I told you, in this state that would make her look like a kindergarten back in the day, if you knew the history of Mississippi. So I don't have time to worry about that. My focus is on us getting together. Our focus is on us helping our people, helping ourselves. And we don't need to be focusing on the oppressors and what the oppressor says about us and those kinds of things. We don't have that kind of waste. What we must do, we must let our people know that not only are we trustworthy when we have the time, whenever you read about the situations of a black Wall Street, and I'm talking now about Tulsa, Oklahoma, whenever you read about what we have accomplished when we are left alone to our own resources, and we have resources within our own hands, to build our reality. We don't only do it, we do it in an exceptional way because we are the gene lineage of the ones that built the first civilization. Those pyramids are still sitting there. The Sphinx is still sitting there. The people who are in Egypt now are not even related to the blood lineage of the ones that built the first civilization. That's us here in the United States of America, that we call ourselves Black Americans. That's
yes,
who
sir.
We are. And we must realize that anyone who is born of the loins of our slave foremothers here in America, whose reproductive systems was taken over to produce live human beings for profit of the oppressors. Some of them have gotten to be billionaires. They could not have gotten to be billionaires if our labor didn't build the foundation that this country is sitting on. You can even have a mega church. The president that is in the United States of America wouldn't have the wealth that he has had it not been for our foreparents and our foremothers in particular, who had to suffer the indignities of being raped and cross-raped by anything that they could get to put a baby or put the sperm in them that created a child that was born out of their loins for slavery. That's how the Black American came into being. And we need to let nobody insult our foremothers by telling us that we are not this or we are not that, or you are this or you are that. We know what we are. Being disrespectful to that lineage. Our boys are walking around here with their pants down and don't even know how they got here or who they are. Well, we men, those of us who, I go all the way back to the Second World War. I'm 91 years old. And I have served everywhere the flag wanted me to serve. And I served honorably. So we have those kind of soldiers that have served that flag that's walking around in this 40 million people. And we're the ones that have to come together to make sure that we are taking care of our families. Decision time is now.
Yes, sir. Some people believe there's more than 40 million Black people here. Much more.
Well, that probably is, but I can tell you this, as I stated before, I don't worry about is that. I worry about can
yes,
we get 10 million to come into this movement, and I guarantee you we will reshape our reality.
Yes, sir. Be positive and don't concentrate on what the oppressor is doing. I understand that. Be positive about Black people and helping Black people.
Well, I want you to let your listening audience know that very soon you're going to extend your time out, and you will be having others to come on, because I know others that you should be listening to, and I will point them to you so that you can get them. I don't know if you're familiar with the Carl Nelson show. He lives in Miami himself. But he has a show that comes out of Washington, D.C. It's called The Carl Nelson Show.
I have, like, the internet bill and then the show bill, so I do the best I can. Like I said, I'm in my ninth year as of January the 2nd, and I appreciate and be grateful for any help I could get.
you're going to be able to extend it out because we're about to run out of time.
Yes, sir. Thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler, Mr. Amos Mosley Tate, and, of course, Mr. Donald Evans. This is his second time back on Show Talk with Angela Butler, and great men. Both are great men. Mr. Donald Evans is a pioneer.
You need a full report from Brother Pace, because he's busy now in assisting me in getting these youth organic markets. This youth organic markets, where children own that youth organic